part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
I'm not doing part. Fanboy.com.
Well, you guys are already funded, so that's good.
Yeah.
Yes, but that's only part of the. It's one of those things where it was a gamble, to, you know, like set the goal low, and then, you know, we breeze past it and then push to what we actually need.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Oh, I see.
That's where we are right now.
I understand. Don, do you realize it's been like 3 years since you've been on this show?
It has?
For Pablo the Gorilla, yeah.
Oh my God, that's right.
It's so crazy.
I haven't been on for anything else?
No.
Really? Wow.
Seems odd.
That is. We didn't do anything for like Nightmare Theater or anything like
no.
that? I guess I would have just been Clay and David.
I talked to Clay and Dave about that, but
yeah,
not you. Not okay. you.
I don't know.
All right, since we're already chatting and stuff, shall we just begin this thing?
Yeah, let's do it.
Shall we just begin? I mean, I think we've kind of already begun in a funny kind of way.
We've only just begun.
we've only just begun. Oh, that's a Carpenter's tune, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yep.
All right, let me begin by just saying that this is the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. My name is Christian Horn. I have two very special guests on the line. I will begin with Michael Tanner because it is his first time on the podcast joining us. And then we have Don Nguyen on the line who has not been on the podcast for at least about 3 years. I can't believe it because we're always tied in like on social media. I always see you on Facebook and Twitter and I'm like, I feel like I'm connected to you all the time. And I'm like, I just looked at my site today and I was like, has it been 3 years? Time flies.
Yeah, it really does.
Time flies. Well, let's start off just by saying whenever anyone has like a crowdfunding thing or a Kickstarter or whatever, I like to begin by, you know, let's sell it. Let's do it. Let's talk about what it is. Who would like to talk about? Now, I was asking you, Don, it's Battle Grapple Rebel, right?
Yes.
Not
yes,
Rebel.
Battle Grapple Rebel. You can find us at battlegrapplerebel.com. Or if you're on the Kickstarter page, just punch in Battle Grapple Rebel.
And I feel like that probably helps the algorithm, right?
If yeah.
If you search for it on the page.
Yeah.
Nice.
Like, oh, people are searching for this. Let's up it in the in the suggested
Absolutely.
Section.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So Battle Grapple Rebel sounds like it's action-packed. Sounds like lots of good stuff. I mean, to me, looking at the Kickstarter and having seen your social media posts, this looks like a good old-fashioned wrestling, yeah. Right?
Good old-fashioned wrestling just set hundreds of years in the future where humanity has become a spacefaring galactic confederation of planets. What would pro wrestling be like with humanity out amongst the stars encountering aliens and exploring strange new worlds? Oh, I think that term is probably copywritten now by Paramount, but that general idea.
So is it an insult for me to say this sounds very like Saturday morning cartoon, like in a great way?
Kind of, but let me explain.
Sure.
So the idea with Battle Grapple Rebel is that professional wrestling, when it's depicted in other media, is usually depicted, especially when it's in genre fiction, as being an actual violent gladiatorial combat activity where the participants are trying to kill each other.
Sure.
It is a real fight.
Sure.
That's not pro wrestling. That's the antithesis of pro wrestling. Pro wrestling is about making the audience believe that the performers are trying to kill each other.
Yeah.
But now, especially in the modern day, we all understand that it's a program, it's a show. It doesn't diminish the athletics of those involved.
Yeah.
But we understand that it's a program and it's scripted and predetermined. So Battle Grapple Rebel is about pro wrestling, just in this genre setting of putting it in a sci-fi setting. So we get to see what, you know, a pop culture touchstone like pro wrestling is like in that context.
Yeah.
So it's over the top characters when they're in the ring, but it's a story about like the people behind that. Like the like our main character is just like a young kid who all he wants to do is be like a battle grapple star. And it's his sort of underdog sports journey an actor's journey to get like the role of a lifetime and succeed in his dreams.
Oh, that's really cool. I mean, that's a very good take. Like, it's not just like smashing and bashing in the ring. You're talking, it sounds like you're, even though it's set like however many years in the future and in space, it's a very sort of like human tale, right? About trying to become either a star or like a star is born sort of thing, but with wrestling.
Yeah.
And without the singing.
It definitely
there might be singing.
Yeah, we haven't gotten to that part yet, but I wouldn't mind drawing it. But yeah, I feel like this is an everyman's tale. So anybody, you know, who has that blue collar work ethic, like, you know, just picking themselves off of the floor and getting to work, pulling their sleeves up, will be able to appreciate this story. So not just a wrestling fan or a fan of, you know, like space operas, space dramas like a Battlestar Galactica, Star Trek or Star Wars. But also just people who enjoy comics. I think a casual reader would love this story. Mm-hmm. You know, we get to see stories that fit the commonality of like what a lot of us experience. And you're going to see some of the archetypes, and we're going to mess with some of those archetypes as well. And I think Michael has done a fantastic job of putting that together in the story and really getting it to flow and click. So yeah, it's like he gets to peel back at the curtains of kayfabe, but set it in this intergalactic, interplanetary world where we also get to explore that aspect of it as well. But yeah, it definitely is one of the, you know, it's, we all start out at that underdog story and then we get to see these different characters, and he's built some fantastic characters like Spin, our protagonist. You know, he is that character that we start out seeing. He's sort of just fresh-faced, has this like naivete, and then his counter that he is diametrically opposed to is a character who seems like he's got it all. He's got the panache, he's got the swag, and you know, he's like, he's already in the game and he's built for the game. Uh-huh. And so we get to see how that plays out.
So is this, so Michael, you had said a little earlier, like that you think fans get that it is sort of like performance art, but do you really think that? Do you think fans know at this point? Because sometimes I feel like, I was into wrestling like during the Hulk Hogan era, like the Mr. T and all that, like in Rocky III. I mean, I'm dating myself, right? But like Cyndi Lauper and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And then I kind of grew out of it. But I mean, I still know people around my age, maybe a little younger, who are like hardcore into wrestling, and they seem to be like really like into it and buying into like all the stuff. So do you really feel that most fans know it's performance art? And B, I'm assuming that you tackle that, I used a kind of wrestling term, tackle that in this story.
Yeah, I've, at this point, only small children don't understand that it's
do you
fake.
Really think so?
But that, that passion you're seeing, that's the same way that, you know, someone can be like way into the, you know, the 49ers or the Seahawks, or like in the terms of comics, how there can be people who are like way into Firefly.
Yeah.
Like they're way into it and they're passionate about it. They don't believe that Mal Reynolds is actually flying the spaceship in space. They understand it's a show.
Sure.
But they're like, they're still passionate about the program. Or you can have to get even like weirder, there are people who literally travel around the world whenever opera companies do the Wagner's Ring cycle.
Yeah.
And they're called ringheads, and they go around the world to every opera company that does the full ring cycle, and it's 4 days, you know, of like long ass operas. Like they're passionate about it. It's just people can be passionate about like anything that like gets to them. And this is like, and like you said, it's performance art. I've for a long time, I've been like, wrestling is much closer to performance art and ballet than it is to sports. But we still, as a world, still frame it in terms of talking about it like it's sports.
Sure.
When it's not, they're athletes, but they like ESPN should not be covering WWE the way it covers it as a sport. But even then, they don't. They acknowledge, they're like, oh, so and so is, sorry, my dog decided to start barking right then. The sports writers will still cover wrestling news, but acknowledge that it's not a sport. Like, it's not a legitimate competition between two people trying to get the better of each other, but they still cover it. It's very bizarre. Wrestling should be in the arts and entertainment section, not the sports section. That's basically what I'm saying.
Oh, it's interesting that, so I remember there was a documentary several years ago, and I cannot remember which wrestler it was about, but it was a very good one. I think I may have seen it on the currently crashing Netflix site.
I was going to say, is it Wrestling with Shadows, the Bret Hart documentary?
I don't know, but it was about somebody who was like a famous wrestler and kind of was now a little bit sort of like broken down, face like hard luck, like his knees were, oh, what's his name? He's got the beard and he's the curly hair and... Oh,
Jake, is it the Jake the Snake Roberts documentary?
I don't. How many wrestling talk are you just going to throw them out?
There's anyway, a lot.
It was a documentary about that, but it very much acknowledged what you're talking about, which was the fact that it is sort of like performance art. Some people really buy into sort of the combat nature of it, but it can take like a serious toll on your body. Like, it's still
absolutely
jumping and kicking and faking hits and stuff like that. And I was like, oh, this is very interesting to me how open they're being about the fact that they're not actually hitting each other, but at the same time, that takes a lot of effort to do.
Yeah,
there's a amount of control and trust in pro wrestling that's required. And it's an interesting thing, like, you will, now that they will acknowledge and we understand concussions and the effect of long-term effect of concussions, you see a lot of the business has changed. Like, you do not see chair shots nearly as often as you used to. Oh. And now they're always protected chair shots. There's the famous Mick Foley, The Rock match that's featured in the Beyond the Mat documentary, where The Rock literally hits Mick Foley with a chair as hard as he can. Cause Mick is saying, like, again, he knows what the crowd wants.
Yeah.
And he took like 15 chair shots to the head.
Jeez.
And absolutely had a concussion, absolutely had to get stitches. And now, like, they're like, well, that's very bad for you. But in the other way, you're seeing a lot more wrestlers doing more risky moves because that's what the crowd is looking for, where the potential for injury is much higher than it used to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's kind of an interesting thing to think about long term, is a lot of these wrestlers wrestlers used to save the big spots for the big shows. You're like, I'm going to jump off this steel cage only at Madison Square Garden, only in front of, 200,000 people for, a $40,000 payday. Now young guys will do, I'm going to jump off that third floor balcony for a VFW show where there's 20 people in the audience.
Wow.
Because that's what I want to do, because that's going to make the crowd pop and that's going to get me over. Wow. And that's dangerous.
Yeah.
And so it's like, are we seeing more wrestlers that won't be able to go like they did? Like, you got guys like Ric Flair. You've got guys like Mick Foley. Well, Mick Foley is retired now.
Yeah.
Or Terry Funk up until a few years ago. Like, very old wrestlers who have been doing it literally for decades and decades. And they still can because they protected their bodies. Their bodies might be absolutely broken down now, but they can still move enough. Like, Ric Flair just posted like a workout match with Jay Lethal, who's a younger wrestler. I think Jay Lethal's probably in his 40s by now. But like, Flair is old, Jay's middle age, but they still did a really cool looking training match together just to show that they could do it.
Yeah.
So it's wild, like, what pro wrestlers will put themselves through for the love of the art.
I just remember being fascinated with the razor blades, like in the armbands and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and being like, oh my God, like, you would do that. Like, talk about some crazy stuff, like, and that wasn't the stuff that I would see, like, when I was a kid, like, again, Hulk Hogan, Rowdy Roddy Piper and that stuff, again, dating myself, but you would see that like in the wrestling magazines, right? Like, these guys like bleeding and stuff, like my friends who were really into it. And I'd be like, oh my, like, kind of be horrified, but knowing in that documentary that I watched and seeing that and just being like, oh, wow. And then it would be like, oh, a little blood goes a long way. It just needs to be a little cut and forehead and there's lots of capillaries. And I'm like, ah, gross. But like, yeah, I guess you dedicated the hairline, to your art.
You just do a little cut on your hairline and your sweat makes it pour down more. So it looks like a lot. And real trust is when you let the other guy blade you. And you know, in wrestling, that's called getting some color. And that's a good segue into us talking about the Kickstarter, the current Get Some Color initiative. We're trying to get to 100 backers because once we get 100 backers, we're getting a colorist and the book's going to come out in color.
Oh, nice.
And we're about 24 more at this point.
Nice.
And we'll
nice.
Get there. So
that's cool. Yeah. Okay. So initially it was going to be black and white.
Yeah. Because printing in color is very expensive.
Yeah. Oh, I know. I know. Well, Don, that I mean, but for your art, that would have been great because, I mean, I like seeing the black and white. I mean, not that color will damage it in any way or reduce it, but I like the, I like I'm scrolling through the Kickstarter page, you know, right now, and I'm looking at your art and I've seen your art online, and there is something about black and white comics that I like.
Yeah. And, you know, I think we went in with the intent of going, well, we don't know if we're going to be able to afford color like right off the bat. So how about we make this so that you can see the action cleanly and that it reads well. And so there's a lot of contrast. I mean, you've seen my stuff. Usually there's like parts that are chunky, but this is a lot more chunky. And, you know, Dave Wheeler, kudos to him. He really knocked it out in terms of inking and lettering it. And it looks fantastic. You know, we've done some edits. So some of the images that you've seen on the page have been cleaned up even more. And we're super excited about this because, like I said, I think it's a fantastic story. And we've been getting a lot of good feedback. Gotten feedback from people who write wrestling comics and from wrestlers themselves.
Oh, that's cool. So
that's really exciting. And yeah, like we were talking about, we're in the Get Color initiative. And I think last I checked, we were only 24 away from hitting that.
Oh, nice. Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, I'm assuming that you were both wrestling fans. Like when you took this on, like, so who came to who, how did this start? I'm assuming Michael, you had a story and then you found Don, like how did that work? I mean, did you both have to be wrestling fans to work on this or did Don have to do like research and pick up wrestling like magazine, old, you know, stuff like that?
Yeah. I had to do quote unquote research. I was a wrestling fan as a kid, very much in the same vein and era that you were.
Yeah.
And I grew up believing that wrestling was real for like the longest time, probably up until like early 90s.
Uh-huh.
I was like, wait a minute, this doesn't seem right. Like, I don't think this is real. So I was like entering my tween stage, I think, at that point. I was like, you know what? This is...
It's all a lie.
This isn't real. But the thing is, I still loved watching it.
Like,
there's just something about the physicality, the athleticism... And, you know, just dudes looking like just yoked superheroes.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, combined with the very just like sort of serialized soap opera melodramatic element to it. And it's basically storytelling. It's, you know, the amazing thing is some of it was, I feel like more of it back then was improvised. But especially now, it's just about that story and like how these characters pull you in. And there's certain characters, like, you know, that could be a babyface and then they turn into a heel or a heel turns into a babyface. And it's like those moments that were like, oh man, like that's what's going to happen right now. Like, this is crazy.
Yeah.
And it's stuff like that. That's like so over the top.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
And, well, I think there was a moment where like Hulk Hogan, like turned into a villain for like a short while. Right. And people were like,
oh, he
joined
for
NWO.
Years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that was a baby face turn heel. That's always like monumentous when it's done right. Like, you gotta imagine, like, Hogan came to WCW as, you know, like monster baby face because he was still Hulk Hogan.
Yeah,
but it's one of those things where like he also ushered in a more cartoony era for WCW because it was like Hulk versus the Dungeon of Doom, and it was just like all guys from the WWF that they brought in to be new nemesis for him.
Yeah.
And so like the WCW crowd was always the more like serious, like Southern wrestling crowd. And so eventually he started to get like go away heat is what they call it. Where people just don't want to see him anymore.
Mm.
So like when he turned babyface, it was, or when he turned heel, it was still such a big deal because he was a babyface. Even if the crowd didn't like him, when he dropped that big leg on Macho Man Randy Savage at Bash at the Beach and signaled that he was a heel and he teamed up with Hall and Nash, the Outsiders, like that revitalized pro wrestling in that era. Cause like WWF was struggling. WCW was like getting cartoony and losing fans, but yeah, the NWO saved wrestling in 1997 or 96 or 97. Yeah. So yeah, that was a huge deal. And he was a heel for at least like 2 or 3 years. Mm-hmm. And then he became a babyface again, and then a heel again, and then a babyface again.
Well, I can tell, Michael, you seem like the big wrestling fan. I mean,
I'm the big wrestling fan.
You are
been the shows.
Well versed in the history of wrestling.
Like I can tell you, as a kid, I also believed it was true. Mostly my thing was the Southern wrestling NWA was real and WWF was fake, and okay, that was the explanation for why wrestlers would go in between. Was they, if they got injured in NWA, WCW, they went to WWF to heal up because it was fake. Like they could, you know, they still had matches, but they weren't really being hurt. Uh-huh. So that was my headcanon for it.
Wow.
And I was, you know, as a kid, like my gadgety uncle hooked us up with like a free satellite dish with free pay-per-view. So I got to watch all the classic pay-per-views. So I saw from WrestleMania 4, I think through 7. No, 4 through 7. Yeah, 4 through 7. And back then there was only 4 pay-per-views a year. So I saw all the WWF pay-per-views like live at the time. And then I kind of fell out of it, like, you know, middle school, early high school. And then at college, my friends were like, you got to start watching WCW because Hulk Hogan turned bad. And there's this thing called the NWO. And it's like this gang that comes in and beats people up. And I started watching it and I loved it. And then like I fell in love with like the cruiserweight division and like kind of the mid-card guys. And then you had like WWF started doing interesting stuff with like The Rock, who is interesting because when he was introduced as a babyface, everyone hated him. Mm-hmm. He had go-away heat from the get-go. And they slowly turned him heel and let Dwayne play how he wanted to play it. And he became the biggest star, like literally the biggest star in wrestling and one of, if not the biggest star in Hollywood. Like,
his story is
amazing. And that's like, and Spin, our main character in Battle Grapple Rebel, has a lot of that early Dwayne Rocky Johnson energy to him. So we'll see where he goes as a character.
Sure. No, I mean, that's interesting because obviously The Rock would be sort of a template that you would want to follow, right? Because I mean, his story is just like unbelievable. I mean, I think at the time, there was a time where it was like pro wrestling, or at least the stuff that was on cable, like mainstream, quote unquote, mainstream wrestling, right? Some people were seeing as a springboard to Hollywood, but it was a hard jump to make, right? And The Rock did that, right? Yeah. Like, I mean, there was some intention there, but there are also struggles, right? Between, you know, who owns what and what name can you use or like that sort of thing, right?
That's the famous thing with Sergeant Slaughter. Uh-huh. Sergeant Slaughter had the G.I. Joe deal before he went to go work for WWF. Uh-huh. And WWF was like, oh, you work for us now. We get a part of that G.I. Joe money. And he's like, no, you don't.
Oh, wow.
And so he stopped working for that company for a while until they brought him back in. And he became the Iraqi sympathizer during the first Gulf War, which was like, you know, he was a big baby face who turned heel in a big way.
Yeah.
But no one wanted Sergeant Slaughter to be the guy who says Iraq is going to win and starts wearing Iraqi uniform. Jeez,
I didn't even know that happened. That's crazy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. No, I mean, there's definitely a big chunk of wrestling that I have missed. I mean, I have not been involved since like the late mid 80s or whatever. But obviously it's so prevalent in our entertainment society that you can't not know that it exists and stuff. And one of the things that I've been maybe not shocked by, but like wondering why didn't this happen sooner, is the presence of like female wrestlers, particularly like really good looking, like fit female models, like as wrestlers. And I just remember being like, why didn't they do this earlier? You know what I mean? And I mean, not being a fan of the current stuff though, is that as popular as the male wrestlers, or if not more, like in that more so in arena?
It's really interesting because there's from like the 50s on, lady wrestlers or girl wrestlers were always a thing, but they were a special attraction.
Yeah.
You would have one match on a card. You'd have like, you'd have the little people match, you'd have the girl match, and then the rest were like real matches, they'd say.
Yeah.
And you had like, there were really talented female wrestlers. Yeah. There wasn't a lot of them, but also there were a lot that just like, they were pretty girls. But they were never the showcase. They were never the focus.
Yeah.
And then you had kind of WWF in the early 80s with Rock and Wrestling, like Wendy Richter,
and Glow.
Yeah. Glow was a huge thing. We haven't talked enough about the influence of Glow on this project.
Yeah.
And Glow was a huge influence on telling backstage stories for pro wrestling. Rest in peace, Glow, because that was a great series. But you have now, and during the height of the WWF, the Attitude Era, like the heyday with Stone Cold and The Rock and all that, they brought in women. The idea was they brought in models to try to teach them how to wrestle. It was panty matches. It was all TNA. And then you had some select female wrestlers who started to kind of like be able to show what they could do and get over. And then, although the moment has passed, unfortunately for WWE, but like 4 or 5 years ago, like the women's division in WWE was like the best thing they had. You had Charlotte Flair, you had Bayley, you had, and some of these girls are still around and they are amazing wrestlers. Like Charlotte Flair is one of the best professional wrestlers in the world in terms
of her dad
mainstream. Yeah. Like she like, and it's weird. Like her brothers, unfortunately one of them died kind of young, but the other one, David, like he worked for WCW for years. The brothers were never that good. And no one would have expected Charlotte to be the one to like get it.
Yeah,
and be
yeah.
like as amazing as she is. And like in Japan, like female pro wrestlers have always been big. And so some of the Japanese wrestlers who have come over here, like Asuka, she's an amazing wrestler. So you've got a very strong female talent pool that was being used really well a few years ago. And now it's kind of, everything's a little wonky in WWE right now.
Oh.
But that's something where we don't get into it too much in this first issue. But
in
later issues, it's Battle Grapple, the intergalactic program, is intergender wrestling. Like, so it's...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What about interspecies? That's what I wanted to ask, too. Do they
also interspecies
wrestle
also
aliens interspecies and stuff?
Yeah. We wanted to treat it the way... We wanted to treat aliens in this world the same way that, quote-unquote, there were ethnic wrestlers in pro wrestling. So there would be, in a territory, like, there would be... there'd be the Asian guy and there'd be one Asian wrestler in the territory. Or if it wasn't a Southern territory, like it was like the Pacific Northwest, there'd be like one black wrestler and he's the only black wrestler. They'd have these kind of, and wrestling is all based around large stereotypes to one extent or the other. But definitely if you were not like a white bred American, like whatever you were was taken to the utmost stereotypical degree. So it's like, Japanese wrestlers would always be named like Tojo, or they'd have something to do with like World War II. Any German wrestler was a Nazi by default. The Von Erichs are a Texas wrestling dynasty where the father was he was a heel wrestler in like the 50s and 60s as basically a Nazi, but eventually like turned babyface and was so beloved, and all of his kids got into the business. And like, it's a tragic story because a lot of them died at like young and, tragically. But like, even though dad was a Nazi wrestler, they were beloved babyface, like, like meat and potatoes guys. The fact that he was a Nazi character was forgotten by the
Operation Paperclip for wrestlers.
Yes, exactly.
Jeez.
So we're doing that. Like when the alien wrestlers, there are alien wrestlers in the Battle Grapple, and they are kind of forced into these stereotypical roles. And we get to explore like how that even though Spin Kilter is his name, is the focus. He's the battle grapple rebel. We get to see a lot of how the other grapplers kind of deal with the business and with how society kind of views them in the lens of the business. So we do deal with like having to deal with stereotypes, and we deal with like pro wrestling has always been a window into the current popular culture.
Yeah.
And it's informed culture and has been informed by popular culture. Yeah. So that's another thing that we're exploring is we talk about it's pro wrestling in the future, but it's also just what pop culture is like in the future.
Oh, yeah. Interesting. So wait, how many years into the future does this take place?
We've been keeping it vague, but I think it's a few hundred years.
Gotcha.
Like I think we can even keep it so we're no longer using the normal or the standard calendar. So it's the year, you know.
Oh, so it's like a Star Trek, like Star Date.
Yeah, like 500, yeah. You know, based on some historical event that hasn't happened yet for us, but is in the distant past for them.
Wow. So Don, for you, that must have been a challenge, like to create this world, you know, in your brain that is hundreds of years in the future. And like a whole different culture that this wrestling world is like siphoning off of, right? Or did you try and just keep it as much like to the present recognizable as you could?
It's a mishmash of things, I feel like. So there's a lot of things that you're just like, oh, I know what that is. And then there's some sillier stuff that we've designed that you'll see in the pages. But, you know, that's the thing we're trying to keep the story evergreen. And you said it far into the future, you still have to have some relatable things that you can look at and go, oh, that's a bowl, that's a cup, I get what these things are for.
Yeah.
My fear is the way Don has incorporated like robots into the future.
Oh, nice. Do they fight robots too?
Well, you know, no spoilers, but robots are just part of their world. The referees are all robots in Battle.
Oh, Battle. Okay.
And they're cute floating robots.
Like the Jetsons.
What's the girl robot in that Pixar movie? I forget
which.
Eve from Wall-E.
Oh, Eve, yeah.
Yes, Eve. Yeah. They're all kind of like tubby versions of Eve from Wall-E. I love
okay.
it.
Okay.
There's like the rickshaw droid. It's it's seamless because it's Don didn't draw it to draw attention to it because it's just part of the world. Like it's excellent kind of framework. Like Don has said, it there's like elements of Blade Runner to it, but it's all very like relatable. Like you said, a cup should look like a cup and a bowl should look like a bowl.
Yeah. So but I mean, Don, for you, like picking up and doing the wrestling art and stuff, I mean, I suppose it's very much like doing superheroes a bit, right? Like, I mean, they wear, for lack of a better term, tights, spandex, they wear costumes and things like that. They fight, they punch, they jump. Was there any difficulty in like translating your art or style to like the wrestling world at all?
No, because I already draw up super jacked people, right? I think, you know, as an artist, you kind of want to expand your horizons and try to work in every genre within the medium that you can. So I think I've done everything up to this point, except for like romance stuff.
Uh-huh.
Like slice of life things, but you know, try your hand at Western horror, comedy, whatever it is. Like, you know, just got to put yourself out there. For the wrestling stuff, I mean, this is probably like the closest to any superhero thing I've done, just because they're all so muscular for the most part, you know, in terms of our characters. But in terms of drawing any action sequences, you know, I had to do deep dives of just watching, and I just went down that rabbit hole and just watched like a ton of The Rock or a ton of like Stone Cold, or like went back even further into like the 80s and like rewatched old like Hulk stuff.
Yeah.
Cause you know, there are some moves there that you're just trying to figure out what the move looks like. And especially, you know, when we talk about the story, it's like, you get that kayfabe aspect, or like what goes behind kayfabe. And then you also toss it into this greater world of like intergalactic politics at large. And then, you know, for that kayfabe part, it's like, you know, like you also get to know how wrestlers called in the ring. And I feel like Michael's done a really good job of like peeling that curtain away and showing you how wrestlers go about doing these moves. And so some of the time I spent was actually to figure out, you know, what the wrestlers were doing in their moves and then how I could rotate the camera to where we as an audience would be able to see them doing these moves and executing the moves and calling things out to each other. And also, you know, how they keep each other safe. So if you pay attention to the drawing, I hope I stay tried and true to be able to show you how the moves are executed, and how, you know, like so much trust is involved in that. Because like we said, we get a lot of us, especially nowadays, we get that wrestling is choreographed.
Yeah.
But it still involves so much physicality, and there's still such a huge risk involved. You know, you're talking about, you're like a 200, 230. You could be lifting a guy who's like 320 up in the air and dropping him down.
Yeah.
And so, you know, those are all things that are considered. And the way Michael wrote the script, it's like, wow, like you really have to think about those things, and you really have to try to execute that visually so that a person who is a fan of wrestling and understands that nuance can see it. So hopefully I executed it well, and people will appreciate those details.
Oh, wow. Yeah, no, that sounds...
And I think Don did a great job with it. I think you did amazingly.
No, that's great. I just wanted to ask too, like as far as the wrestling matches or the wrestling sequences and things like that, Mike, were you calling out like, he does a pile driver, or this person does this and this person does that? And then Don, you would have to figure out the best way to draw that, I would imagine, right?
For sure. There's a scene that Michael wrote. I feel like I it's not too spoilery, I hope, but he basically is like, draw a dragon leg screw, which meant I had to look up what a dragon leg screw was specifically. I watched it like from two or three different angles before I figured out exactly what was involved in the move. And then I had to figure out how to diagram that move out, because there's a very particular sequence that involves that move.
Sure.
And that's one of those great moves that it looks so damn impressive, but when you break down the individual parts, it is a fundamentally silly move.
What was it called again?
So the dragon
leg screw.
Leg screw.
I'm totally going to look that up after we're done.
So a guy, so popularized by the Japanese wrestler Ultimo Dragon, you grab your opponent's leg, like your opponent is trying to kick you or whatever, and you catch their leg.
Yeah.
And the idea is that you grab their leg and you spin yourself like a corkscrew while holding their leg.
Oh.
So the idea is it flips your opponent around.
Yeah.
And because you're in control, it does damage to them because they're like, oh, gosh. but it's one of those moves where, if done right, the hold on the leg is not tight. It's literally just someone like spinning themselves, and your opponent spins themselves separately. Like, it's supposed to work in unison, but they're not really wrenching the leg. It's kind of like, I'm going to spin my body and you spin your body too. It's collaborative, but you break out those separate pieces, you're like just two guys like falling over.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
But it looks like when it's executed properly, it looks like they're using the other guy's momentum against him and then putting on a really painful move to lock him. Yeah.
Nice. And so do you get into the nuts and bolts of the choreography in this book? Like when people are working with each other and wrestling and stuff like that, like do you get into that sort of thing? Like what the planning of the moves are? And then Don, like, did you have to say like, in a storyboarding sort of way, maybe less comic booky, like break down moves like panel per panel and things like that?
Well, luckily for this first issue, we only really have one match.
Okay.
Because we basically have, there's one match. Because the characters like are kind of, this is their what's a good way to start? Like their end of the year project.
Oh,
like
okay.
You kind of imagine like their they've thesis. Had like, yeah, this is their thesis project that they're presenting. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So they kind of know it backwards and forwards. So we don't really go into how they kind of plan it. We go into a little bit of their communication in the ring.
Yeah.
But in future episodes where there's our future issues, where there's a lot more in-ring action, there will be kind of like, there will be more examples of like doing different stuff and a lot of like the choreography or calling in the ring or guys planning out every single step before the match. whatever kind of works best and moves the story forward from there.
Oh, wow. No, I mean, so this is, you plan on this being ongoing? How many issues? Is it going to be like a limited series or?
This particular story is planned for 6 issues.
Oh, okay.
The idea is that, and why it's called Battle Grapple Rebel, is the idea is that if this is successful and people like it, and like the world we've built, the Rebel story has concluded, but we can do more Battle Grapple stories focusing on different characters or different aspects of the world we've built.
Nice. And let me ask you, I mean, outside of, I mean, you've already said like there's intergender and interspecies kind of like wrestling, but what about sort of the rest of the world? Like the political landscape, not political, but, you know, pop culture landscape, like how have things, I mean, obviously this is hundreds of years in the future or whatever, you know, made up Star Trek star date. But how has the world in general changed? Are people watching these like as holograms in their living rooms? Are they still on screens? Are they like putting VR headsets on to like experience the, you know, the actual fights? Like how different is it than what we experience today?
Different enough, I guess, is the best way, because they watch it on like holo screens, and holo screens are a big part of it.
Gotcha.
It's politically, you'll have to wait and see.
Oh, gotcha.
There are hints in the first issue of what the world is like, and what it means for different people. But that's the world itself within the, you know, human confederation of planets. I don't think we actually named it in the book yet, so we have to like settle on a name. It's, you know, it's Star Trek-y, it's Star Wars-y, it's Battlestar Galactic-y. It's suffice to say, it's everything's not great. But people still, you know, people love their TV regardless of what's going on in the outside world.
Nice. And is this
oddly?
Ahead, Don.
I was gonna say, oddly, you know, if you look at how history has gone for us as a species, and then you look at this story in terms of what Michael has done and like written, I kind of interpreted it this way with the art for this first issue, is not that much has really changed. There may be some things like the robots or like hollow tables and hollow screens, but ultimately, like, a lot of the themes and thematics and trials and tribulations are still what the characters endure, what we still go through. Like, whatever is in the zeitgeist, whatever is very like prescient and temporal right now is still happening in the future. And, you know, we always talk about people who don't know the past are doomed to repeat it, right? So I honestly can kind of see some of these things going that way. And that's a part of the story, and that's a part of how we understand things in a way, like I was talking about before with archetypes. So I think we're going to get to see Michael lay down some incredible touchstones that we can all identify with. And it'll be such a pleasure to see where he takes it from there. Because I got to tell you, when I read this script for the first time, my mind was completely blown. Like, you had asked earlier how Michael and I came to this pairing and like how we met up, is, you know, we have been friends before. We knew each other through the Grand Geek Gathering and have hung out before. And he just, you know, it was one night we were hanging out at San Diego Comic-Con, and he's like, hey, I got an idea and I think you might be good for it. Let me just pitch it to you real fast. And his elevator pitch was quick. He was basically like, can you imagine if Star Wars like met wrestling? And I was like, I did. Like, he that's all he had to say. But then he sent me the script and I was just like, holy. And I just, like, I couldn't believe it. So yeah, he has built an incredible world, and I think it's a gold mine, and I would love for people to read this story. Even if you're not a wrestling fan, I believe that the story and the consequence of the story is going to be something that you're going to enjoy, and just the way it's told. And, you know, I think my artwork's not that bad, so.
Your artwork's very good. I mean, one of the things I wanted to mention to you is, I mean, I've seen your style developing over the years, and you remind me, and I hope this is a compliment, I actually really like this artist. There's a lot of like John Romita Jr. in stuff that I'm seeing and stuff that you're doing.
I appreciate that.
Younger John Romita Jr., I should say. I mean, he's still great, but I mean, I don't think he puts as much into his stuff as he used to. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, that's a high compliment. I love John Romita Jr. and he owes me an eraser.
Why does he owe you an eraser?
He's stealing an eraser.
We'll talk about that story another time.
Oh, you can't drop that on the podcast and be like, John Romita Jr. owes me an eraser and not tell the story. One of the things I wanted to ask about in general, when you're sort of explaining the world and wrestling in this world, is this sort of a way, is this like a little bit of like that hero's journey where like wrestling is so huge, or like something like, say, like the Running Man movie, where it's like so huge that the person who succeeds or becomes a big wrestler in this world becomes like a huge cultural icon, or also like a hero that can change the world or make a difference and stuff like that? Is wrestling like that big in this world?
Yeah. The Battle Grapple is the most popular program in the galaxy.
Nice.
So the stars of the Battle Grapple are the biggest stars in the galaxy.
Nice.
They are top tier celebrities.
Nice.
And one thing I haven't mentioned in any of the interviews so far is Battle Grapple is so big that they don't travel to a planet's local arena. They travel in a spaceship that is the arena and land on planets.
Oh, wow.
And when they land, it's the biggest deal on that planet.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. So it's like a huge, so they're like in a, I mean, what, like a Battlestar Galactica circus traveling like spaceship, and then they land on the planet and everyone's like, the wrestling's here, and they get all excited.
Yeah. There are specific. Yeah. It's a space arena.
Oh, that's amazing. That's so great. That's cool. I like it.
I thought that was a very fun concept, is that it's so popular. They just live on a spaceship. That's the arena. And people come onto the spaceship to see the show.
Nice.
They're wrestling space carnies. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. I can't remember. Did you draw it to look kind of like a big carnival tent?
It's essentially a giant arena with huge engines on it, so that it has almost like a the feel of a wagon, if you will, like an old stagecoach wagon.
Oh, wow. Does it, I guess I'm trying to imagine it sort of like a giant arena, but like with a dome over it, or does it have like artificial gravity, or is it like a ship, like just like a regular, I guess, I don't know. I guess people will pick up the book, or
you'll get to see it.
You'll see it in the book.
Yeah, you'll see it in the book. Oh, that's great. That's so cool.
A wide out of it and a close up of it.
How much work did that take, Don, to design that ship or come up with the idea?
I mean, you know, that's the thing about how Michael writes that I love so much, is he leaves the descriptions vague enough but like detailed enough where you can play around with it and still get a sense of how everything works. So one of my favorite things is, you know, we were talking about, you know, the older generation of wrestlers and even like the newer ones. And I feel like I was able to pick and choose aspects of all these wrestlers that I like, or that I've seen recently too, that I was able to add to the characters that Michael has on the page. And I feel like, you know, if you're a wrestling fan, this is where that nuance comes in. You're going to be able to see these characters, look at them and go, I can kind of see where that comes from. I hope, like I said, I hope we did that justice, and I hope, wrestling fans will pick up on that and enjoy some of those as well. And, it'll tickle their fancy.
Nice. That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, everything sounds really, really fantastic. I mean, I've been following you on Facebook and Twitter, and all that stuff. So I've been seeing the artwork, and I've got to contribute myself to this campaign, because, I'm not a big wrestling fan, but everything that you're talking about sounds like super fun and super exciting.
Yeah.
There's a scene in the book that Don really captured, kind of like these quiet moment with Spin and his family, that if you've ever been an artistic person or had a dream and have had someone who loves you tell you to not do that dream, you'll relate to this book. And I think you don't need to be a wrestling fan. You don't need to be a sci-fi fan. This is me talking out my own butt here. I think I'm very proud of how I wrote that scene. I'm very proud of how Don drew that scene. I think that's the bit that can really, and that story, that through line, I think really will resonate with people.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. It sounds a little bit like, I mean, I'm sure it's not exactly like this, but there was that movie that came out with Florence Pugh, Black Widow's Wrestling with My Family.
Wrestling with My Family.
Yeah. It was a really good movie. I really like the human aspect. It is about wrestling, but there's humanity in it. So it seems like this touches a little bit on that as well.
Yeah. That movie's based on a true story.
Yeah. Like, yeah, exactly.
And yeah, like the drama of wrestling and of people who want to be wrestlers is fascinating.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, I recommend that movie for anyone who hasn't seen it. And I totally mispronounced the actress's last name. I mangled it.
It's Pugh, right?
Yeah.
Like, Pugh.
Yeah. She's Black Widow's sister. Okay. Let's just put it that way. Yeah. In the Marvel movies.
She likes hot sauce and mac and cheese.
Yeah.
Now I'm getting hungry.
Cool. Any final thoughts on Battle Grapple Rebel?
Well, we have some fantastic tiers that are still left. Unfortunately, you know, people's circumstances change. So we had a backer who had to switch out, and they dropped out of a tier that allows you to get a custom figure made of yourself.
Oh, get out.
A battle grappler. Yeah. So that just opened up recently. We also have, if you go onto the page, you'll see that I did a cover, and that cover is actually a work in progress. It's not the finished cover. The colors that you see on the page are just flat so that I know where the colors are going to go. Uh-huh. But you'll also notice that it has a lot of negative space or a bunch of white space behind our wrestlers. And that is so that we can fill in backers. So there's a tier, I believe it's at 150, where you will get immortalized on the cover of a comic book.
Oh, wow.
As one of the audience members. So we're doing that. We got, obviously, physical copies, digital copies. They have trading cards. I believe there's a sticker involved too. And
it's
like
Kickstarter.
I said,
there's always stickers.
There's always stickers.
And you know, we are just right now. We're just gunning for that first stretch goal to hit 100 backers. We're 24 away. So jump on, tag in, and put us over so that we can get the book in beautiful, beautiful color. The other thing is we have an amazing variant cover done by Scott Waldelli from Southland Tales, which is.
Oh, wow.
Brett, my bad. Yeah. I just had a brain fart right there. Brett Waldelli, which is, you know, that's crazy. It's from Southland Tales.
Yeah, no, I remember his art. Rock, that's fantastic stuff.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, why don't we tell the people, I mean, it's Battle Grapple Rebel on Kickstarter, battlegrapplerebel.com.
That's correct.
Battlegrapplerebel.com or search for Battle Grapple Rebel on Kickstarter homepage, and I'll take you right there. We are over 100% funded. So the book is definitely getting made, but we'd love to add.
We want more money, more golden wrestling belts.
We gotta get everyone paid.
Everyone paid. That's a good idea to get everyone paid. So where can people find you besides Battle Grapple Rebel, like online? Which social media handle do you prefer? Do you have a website? Where can people locate you in the galaxy?
You can find me on Twitter at MikeIsErnie at youknowhowtwitterworks.com. And you can visit my website, buymichaeltanner.com, or you can visit my web store. I'm having a huge sale right now. I do a graphic novel series called Junior Braves of the Apocalypse, which is kids fighting zombies. I also do a series called Orcs in Space, which volume 2 just came out. Actually, I think it's coming out this week. I did that with the Gaith brothers and Justin Roiland, co-creator of Rick and Morty, and Francois Vignon is the artist. It's a hilarious sci-fi comedy about three idiot orcs who steal the most advanced spaceship in the galaxy and go out on wild adventures. So you can buy that from my web store or go to your local comic book shop and say, hey, order Orcs in Space. That would be amazing, and I'd love you guys forever.
Yeah. And Don, how about you?
I am known as Winning It Online. That's my last name, the most common Vietnamese last name ever. N-G-U-Y-E-N. Add an I-N-G-I-T to that, and it becomes Winning It. You can find that on most social media platforms, or my website is also winningit.com. I am, of course, a part of Battle Grapple Rebel right now, but also just launched today is Cannibals on Mars from David Schrader and Tony Donnelly. So be on the lookout for that. I'm a part of that project.
That's right.
Two more Kickstarter campaigns upcoming. Look out for Retro and working on Pablo the Gorilla right now. So a lot in store for everybody. So if you give me a follow, you can check out all the crazy artwork that's going to be coming out.
Busy, busy man. I will vouch for Pablo the Gorilla. I liked it.
I appreciate it.
I like it. But that's not what we're talking about right now. It's Battle Grapple Rebel on Kickstarter. I have been chatting with Michael Tanner and Don Nguyen. Any final words, gentlemen? Final words?
Thank you for having us on.
Oh, absolutely. Anytime. Come back anytime. It's been a lovely chat, and I learned a little bit more about wrestling than I thought I would.
I think also, a lot of people are.
It's weird. I thought there'd be a lot more crossover, and I think there is. It's just our kind of media circles, Don, are people who are like, what's pro wrestling?
Really?
It's fabulous. Yeah. That's I will say so this. I'm going to throw this out. If someone who listens to this backs this book, send me a DM on Twitter at Mike is Ernie. Let me know that you backed it, and don't lie, because I can check the back report and see if you did it. I will guarantee you something special in your rewards package when you get the book.
What? Oh, that's challenge first.
That's just yeah. part. Part-time, it's the part-time challenge.
Part-time fanboy special. Nice.
Or even better, if you do back from listening to Part-Time Fanboy, which we love, and we love Christian, obviously, drop that note directly into the comments. So after you pledge, you can go into the campaign comments section and just leave a comment. We'd greatly appreciate it, because not only does every dollar help with the campaign, but every comment and every share from the campaign page helps Kickstarter know that this is a project that is loved and that people want to see made. And yeah, it'll really help to boost us.
Nice. Well, I will be interested in that as well, to see if anybody listening goes in and calls me out. That would be very nice of you.
That would be amazing.
That would be amazing. I'm always surprised. So I hope it's not crickets, but I hope that somebody does do that, because I mean, the surprises are worth it. So I love it. Thank you for doing that, gentlemen. That's very cool. Your project is Battle Grapple Rebel. I keep wanting to say Rebel, but Battle Grapple Rebel on Kickstarter. This has been Part-Time Fanboy with the Part-Time Fanboy special. My name is Christian Horn. Yes, go support Battle Grapple Rebel on Kickstarter. It looks like a lot of fun. I'm going to go drop some cash on it right now. Thank you as always for listening. You can check us out on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Our email is ptf@parttimefanboy.com. Thanks for listening, and we will be back soon with another episode. Bye.
Part-Time Fanboy. Part-time. Part-time fanboy.